You have in front of you a sheet that has in it essentially the two presentations of Aseret HaDibros, one that's found in this week's Parsha of Yisro, and one that's found in Vaschanan. And the truth of the matter is that there are a fair number of distinctions between Parshas Yisro and Parshas Vaschanan. Some of them are probably more well known than others. One of the distinctions that's probably well known to you, if you examine for a moment, the Parsha of Yisro, which is on page number one, you'll notice that when the Torah speaks of Shabbos, so of course Shabbos here commemorates, as the Torah indicates, the fact that the world was created in 6 days. While in Parshas Vaschanan, which is on page number two, there, as you undoubtedly are aware, Shabbos is not connected to the Bria Sa'ola, but rather Shabbos is connected to Yitzias Mitzrayim. That's one of the famous distinctions between the Parsha in Yisro and the Parsha in Vaschanan. However, there are some other distinctions that are not as well known, and just to mention one of two of them, just for your edification, if I may, you'll take a look for a moment in Parshas Yisro. Again, we reference to the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em. Notice that the Torah has in the left-hand column, it's actually in Perek Chof, Pasuk Yud Bet, Kabed et Zavicha v'Simecha, L'man Yarichun Yomecha Al Ha'adama Asher Hashem Elokecha Nosein Loch. The Torah mentions the obligation of Kibud Av V'Em and also tells you that the schar for Kibud Av V'Em is Arichus Yomim, a person who is devoted to longevity, and it says, Al Ha'adama Asher Hashem Elokecha Nosein Loch, relating it to Eretz Yisrael. Look for a moment in Parshas Vaschanan, thank you, which is on page 2, then you'll see the upper left hand corner, and there it adds a number of things. Kasher Tzimcha Hashem Elokecha, it mentions the fact that Hashem commanded us regarding Kibud Av V'Em, and then it also points out L'man Yarichun Yomecha, but another expression is Yadu L'man Yitach Loch, it will be for your benefit. Alo Adam Asher Hashem Elokecha Nosein Loch. So that's a distinction which is again discussed actually by the Gemara Baba Kama. But what I would like to talk about, actually, is the two presentations of Yisro and Vaschanan from an overall perspective. Why was there a necessity for the Torah to present, shall we say, the Luchos, the Aseret HaDibros, twice? Are there two different messages that are being addressed over here? And I believe the answer is yes. And I want to show you, based on an examination of each of these two Parshas. So we'll start, actually, with Parshas Yisro, which is right in front of you on page number one. The Torah has a Hakdama in Perek Yutes, as you see. The Torah begins by, I underline the psukim that are relevant. So the Torah describes when we came to Har Sinai, and then we have a statement on the part of Hashem. Rashi comments that we are addressing here two different groups of people, women and men, and there are messages are being addressed to both, and the Torah speaks in very, shall we say, I would say, even emotional terminology. The Altam Shema Tishmon Bikoli, first mentions, even prior to that, Hashem says, I carry you, Al Kanfe Nisharim. I carry you on the pinions of eagles, and you'll be to me a segula, a treasure nation, and you're going to be on Mamlech Eskoanim, God Kadosh. And then a bit later, in the next paragraph, the Torah describes how Moshe is told to go and sanctify the people, prepare them for the Har Sinai experience. But one of the things that's mentioned many, many times, you look at, for example, in the middle section, where the Torah says, V'hikbal Torah sa'am sa'adib le'mor. Here, they are told many, many times that the Har Sinai is going to be demarcated. Har Sinai was divided, actually, into three sections. There's Machane Shechina, Machane Leviyah, and Machane Yisrael. V'hikbal Torah means that the area should be delineated. Miloshen Gvul. There should be bounds, or boundaries, if you will, that are set up, and they're not allowed to go beyond the boundaries. The Torah repeats this idea many times. Every particular group has its own area. The Gemara says, actually, in a different context, who is the Chacham? Someone who knows his place. So every member of Klal Yisrael has to know their place within the framework of Har Sinai. And then, towards the bottom again, the Torah repeats and reiterates this idea. Vayomer Hashem Moshe Reid on the bottom of the right-hand column on page 1. Reid Ha'ed Ba'am Sukim Chaval of Chafes Chav Gimel. Warn them again and Moshe Rabbeinu said, told Tells Hashem, there's no need, you already told them, Hashem's no, warned them again. So this is the element which is very pronounced over here in the Parsha, namely the element of Hagbalot. And the idea of a Kiddashtem, they have to prepare themselves before they go ahead and are introduced to the whole idea of Harsina. The word Kedusha, by the way, I don't know how you translate the term. Generally, we translate, well, how do we translate the word Kedusha? As what? You are way ahead of us. You are actually, you have in mind what I have in mind to say already. But I'm not as, shall we say, as quick as you. But how do you know what the translation of Kedusha is?
Holiness.
Holiness, correct? But you are 1,000% right. And what's the proof to your definition, to your translation?
Kedusha.
That's number one. Wow, wow, wow. You should be saying this year. You are 1,000% right even in terms of that. I'll bring you even a simpler raya, namely for the pasuk of Kedoshim Tiyu. Kikadosh Ani Hashem Elokeichem. Rashi comments over there, Rashi comments on the juxtaposition between Achamemus and Kedoshim. You know, Achamemus and Kedoshim have a list of arayim, forbidden relationships, correct? Why do they repeat it twice? In one of them you have a list, the other one you have the list with the onesh, with the punishment, that also that's in the parasha of Kedoshim. But there the pasuk says, well, Hashem Shekach. There the pasuk actually lists the onesh as well, but when it says Kedoshim Tiyo, so Rashi comments, Prushim Min Harayim. You should separate yourself, as you indicated beautifully, min harayim. The word kadosh, when we say Hashem is atah kadosh, v'shimcha kadosh, u'kadoshim v'chol yom yaluch haselah, referring to malachim, that means Hashem is set apart, transcendent. Hashem is, if you will, above, beyond, correct? That's why the language of Kedusha implies a sense of separateness. You're 1,000% right. There are many proofs to this. The Ramban, as you know, has a slightly different translation than Rashi over there at the beginning of Kedoshim, but the idea of Kedusha is essentially respect for a boundary line. The distinction between an animal and a human being is that an animal has no respect for bounds. An animal will obviously trespass. All boundaries or less, there is some sort of a gader, some sort of a fence, unless there is a mechitza. So this is very significant over here. Prior to Har Sinai, Hashem tells us we have to go ahead and discipline ourselves. Okay, this is one element I just want to point out. Now there's another element also found in Parshas Yisro that I think is also worthy of note. There's whatever terms are repeated in the Torah, especially in the context of the same parsha, one has to be very alert to this terminology or to the repetitive nature of the terminology. And I'll just show you what I mean over here. And perhaps I'll read some of the psukim without necessarily showing it to you inside, but you can trust me. I'm reading the psukim here that I found here in Yisrael. And more or less, the Torah somehow has placed an inordinate stress on one word. I don't know if you can just look briefly and see which word I'm talking about, which is found in different way and different forms and different variations of this word, and that's the word kol. Kuf vav lamed. For example, the very beginning, Moshe Rabbeinu was told, Yatem shema tishmo bit kol li. A bit later, Vayi kolo suvrokin. V'yanon kavid alahar bit kol shofar chazak meod. A bit later, Vayi kolo shofar holech v'chazek meod. Moshe daber v'alokim yanenu v'kol. And then after the Aseres HaDibros, which is also found over here, on the left-hand column, the Chalam Roi Mesakolos V'yesalapidin, V'yeskol HaShofar V'yesar HaShem. So, as I said, the constant reference to this term kol is something that automatically should really arouse our curiosity. Minimally that, but again, it's going to tell us something about the nature of Aseres HaDibros that are found in Parshas Yisro. I will now ask you, perhaps because of the fact that we all daven on an ongoing basis, on Friday night before the Chadodi, there is a Perek Tehillim that we say, I believe it's Tehillim Chavtes, if I'm not mistaken. Which one is that? Do you recall? Right before the Chadodi, and I think on Shabbos morning we say before Musaf, after Kriyas HaTorah. The Ari HaKadosh claims that that particular Mizmor is full of Kabbalistic allusions. I'm just citing what the Ari said, I don't have a clue what that's all about. But I'm just citing this piece of information. What am I talking about? Which Perek Tehillim is said on Friday night? Mizmor LaDavid. And notice there also, excellent. You actually read my mind quite well. There we say, Mizmor LaDavid, Havel Hashem Bnei Elim. And then we have the following. Kol Hashem Al Amayim. Next, Kel HaKavad Hirim, Hashem Amayim Rabim. Kol Hashem Bakoach. Kol Hashem Behadar. Kol Hashem Shobe Arozim. Kol Hashem Kol Sivav Oseish. Kol Hashem Yochid Nidbar. So guess what, according to Chazal, is that Mizmor referring to? So Chazal said that Mizmor is referring to Ma'amar Har Sinai. So apparently there is some, shall we say, parallel between that particular Perek Tehillim and what we have over here in the Akdama to Parshas Yisrael, and I hope to discuss that in a few moments. I just want to say over something that that I heard from, if you take a look over here, I heard from Rabbi Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal a number of times in the Yisrael here in the left-hand column. The psukim that I underlined in the left-hand side, you see towards the bottom, the Chalam Rome is Akolos Yes Alapidim. They saw the call, the Lapidim Kol Hashovu Yehar Hashem, and then we have the following series of psukim: Vayar Ha'am Vayanu Vayam Demirachol. Translate: the Am sees Vayanu. What word do you see in the word Vayanu? The word No. What does it mean? Novanod, wandering. Correct. Novanod. The punishment that was given to whom? The Kayin. Novanod Yebaretz. Vayar Ha'am Vayanu Vayam Demirachol. So as always, we said over from the Kotzke. You heard of the Kotzke? The Admor Mikotzke, well-known Hasidic sage. So he had a lot of, shall we say, very sharp kind of statements that he was wont to make. And here he made a sharp statement as well. And you'll see why in a moment. Rasulullah said in Yiddish, pardon my Yiddish for a moment, and I'll translate it to English. Vayarham vayonu, the folk, hot gizen, they saw. Vayonu, they have beshokel. What does vayonu mean? Shokel, you know what shokel means. What? To shake. There's a pasuk in Chumash, you know the pasuk? Shokel, you shokel hashor. It's a pretty bad joke. It seems worse when no one gets it. But anyway, the Vayara Vayanu, the Shah Disco, Sokol Yisakel, Shokol Yisakel, that's because I had a Rebbe who was a jokester in grade 3. I remember what he said more than anybody else. So he told us one day that chicken and milk could be eaten together. I thought that was great. And so I asked him, what's the proof? He said, it's a puzzle in the Chumash. The puzzle says, V'yatzat zipor lo basar. Fowl is not meat. So what do I know? I'm a third grader. I don't know much Chumash. And the Rebbe says, fowl is not meat. I accept that. I went home, told my father's friend of the bracha. My father quickly said, I'm getting on my coat, we're having that Rebbe fired. My father's very serious. The opposite of me. Anyway, so the things very intensely. And the pasuk says, "V'yatzat zipor lo basar," but basar is spelled with a tav. "V'yatzat zipor lo batar." It's in the Brisbane Absorim. What did I know? I didn't know that. So then we come to the back to the Menahil and the Rebbe. And so the Rebbe said, when he was confronted by my father, who felt that this was absolutely unconscionable, this kind of teaching, even though the Rebbe meant it as a joke to excite us, to get us interested in what we were learning. So he said, the Rebbe said, I sometimes crack jokes, like every 3 minutes. So he cracks jokes to get us, shall we say, into things and to really excite us. Matter of fact, I actually went looking for that pasuk because of the Rebbe. I wanted to see what it said. Then I discovered the pasuk is read with a tav. It has a tav, not a sin. So the next day, of course, but then, of course, everything had taken place, the whole interaction with the banal, what have you. The Rebbe said he was it's a joke and he doesn't mean it, and don't worry, don't take it seriously. And he had many other jokes. I remember them quite well. So this the Rebbe I remember the most of my days in, shall we say, primary school. Okay, anyway, so Rasulullah, he said, Vayaram Vayanu, they shuckle. But guess what? Did the Har Sinai have any impact on them? No. Vayam du Merachol means it's a momentary kind of impact. Often we are exposed to even things that are made dramatic or exciting, and while we are there, it has an impact. And a moment later, we leave the scene, and guess what? We're back to square one. Also, as you said over here, for the Kotzke. Okay, anyway, I just showed you two or three things, and so now turn the page, and we come to, that is page two. And we come to Va'eschanan, and you just get a sense, when you read the psukim here, that it's a totally different presentation, which of course is what I'm going to try to essentially tell you. Va'eschanan, as you know, in general, Sefer Dvarim speaks about Hashem and his connection to Eretz Yisrael. The Parsha begins on Moshe Rabbeinu implores Hashem to enter the Promised Land. Va'eschanan al Hashem va'yisai lemar. Whose Ba'mitzvah Parsha is it? Oh, so you know that. Quite aware of it, both of you. And then we have a whole bunch of communications that we should observe Chukim and Mishpatim in order to be able to enter the Promised Land. So among the Psukim, I'm starting with the right-hand column. Raki Shomalacha means after this presentation, suddenly there's a rather jolting kind of warning, which is the introduction to Matan Torah. Raki Shomalacha, Ushmor Nafshecha Me'od, what does Hashem tell us? Be careful. Pentishka Chesadvarim Asherol Enecha. Lest you forget that which you saw. Namely, What did you see? Maman Hasina. The experience of Maman Hasina should not be forgotten. Ufen Yasur Mubachal Kalim Echayecha. Vodatom Livanecha Livanecha. The Ramban, by the way, sees these sukkim, both a positive commandment and a negative commandment. The mitzvah say, the mitzvah lo say, the mitzvah say is to transmit the experience of Maman Hasina. Somehow, to transmit it to our children, to our grandchildren, and it's also a law. The law means don't forget what happened in Maman Hasina. The Torah goes on. Yom Asher Amad Avnei Hashem Elokeinu B'Chorev. You stood before Hashem. Chorev, of course, refers to what? We're not talking about the school not far from here. But rather, what is Chorev? Hasinai. And that's also a fascinating thing. The Torah calls Hasinai Chorev. We'll talk about that if I get to it later on. Be'amar Hashem Eli, Hashem said to me, Hakeli Yasa'am, the Hashmim is the Roy, Hashem Yilmudu, the Yir Osi. I hope they'll fear Hashem. Kol Hayamim Hashem, Chayim Ala Adamov, Yisbenem Yilam Eidim. So then the Torah says, we were under the mountain, the Ahar, Bo'er, Bo'er, Shalev HaShamayim. Now this word you're going to see, similar to the word kol, that recurs so many times in Parshas Yisrael, there's a word here that recurs so many times as well. That is which word? Esh. Vayidabri Hashem Aleichem Mitocha Esh. And now if you just look at the Pesukim that I underline, next Pesukim that I underline, V'nishmartim Oda Nafshol Seichem, Ki Lo Riyisem Kol Tzmuna B'yom Dibri Hashem Aleichem V'chorei Mitoch Ha'esh, a bit lower, lower down, towards the bottom on the right hand column. Ki Hashem Elokecha, Esh Ochlohu Kel Kano. And if you continue, you'll notice that here, the, of central significance is the image of fire. Somehow the fire of Har Sinai, and that is mentioned many, many times. If you'll take a look down the Pesukim that I underlined, came out across the board, you will see many, many times that the idea of Esh is mentioned. And as I said, this is rather significant. If you look, for example, the middle column towards the bottom, I underlined it also. It mentions that there Hashem consummated a pact with us, panim b'fanim dibrei Hashem b'rachem bahar mitoch ha'esh. And then again, Anochi Yomei ben Hashem b'neichem. Moshe is sort of the one who is the kind of go between Hashem and the people. Ki yireisem b'nei ha'esh. You are frightened because of the fire. That's why you didn't want to ascend the mountain. And then again, if you look in the left-hand column, you'll see it repeated again in the middle. Es advarim ha'ela dibri Hashem el kol ka'alchem bahar mitoch ha'esh ha'anon v'arofel. And then a bit later, v'yahar ba'er ba'esh. And a bit later, v'yaskol ha'shamana mitoch ha'esh. And then again, repeated two or three more times. I think my point is rather obvious. And that is that here, as opposed to the language of kol, what language is being utilized over here? Esh. Somehow that's something that's very critical that you should be cognizant of as well. And this entire parsha of Eschanan, really, to a large extent, there is a lot of discussion here, and this also is something which is clearly connected to Eretz Yisrael. And if you look at the Pesukim, you'll see the connection to Eretz Yisrael. In general, the whole Sefer Dvarim is much more connected to Eretz Yisrael than obviously anything prior to that. The reason is because we're about to enter Eretz Yisrael. So you have, in Mishnah Torah, a lot of discussion, the beginning of Dvarim, Vashanan, Ekev, Re'eh, Shotim, a very clear connection to Eretz Yisrael that should be noticed. So let me just, if I can, just articulate differences between the Pasha of Yisrael and the Pasha of Vashanan. That's good, I just, if you jot them down for yourselves, but just remember, one is, as I said, what we mentioned, that in Yisrael, the theme seems to be the theme of Kol. Mashenkein of Vashanan, the theme is the theme of Esh. Number two, a second distinction that I think is also pretty self-evident. In Parshas Yisrael, whom is Hashem addressing? And the answer is Hashem is addressing the generation that left Egypt. And again, the Pesukim, I'm not going to read the Pesukim, but you can see, and the context, of course, historically, is the generation that left Egypt. And even the terminology that's used by the Torah is very fascinating. There's one term, I spoke about this actually, in a different context once. Klal Yisrael is described in different ways. What are the different ways that Klal Yisrael are described? Sometimes they're called B'nai Yisrael, sometimes. Klal Yisrael, sometimes. Am. This term of Am, if you take a look at Yisrael, on page 1, you'll look around, it's not too difficult to see. You'll notice that the term Am is repeated many, many times. I'll just read some of the Pesukim without, you can look at it yourself. Vayoshev Moshe es divrei ha'am el Hashem. Vayan kol ha'am yachto. Ziknei ha'am. Bavur Yishma Ham, Divre Ham, Lech Alam, Leinei kol ha'am. V'igbalt es ha'am. Min ahara la'am. V'yikadesh es ha'am. I'm not going to read all the psukim. I jotted them down for myself. The term am is again a term that is utilized again and again and again. If you take a look at verse Hanan, how is Kali Yisrael described? Again, I'm asking you to overview all these three columns and do so in a very swift kind of way, in a jiffy kind of way. But here, you'll notice that the term that's used is nowhere near the term am. Here, we are described as Yisrael, Goy Godol, Kol Yisrael, Shema Yisrael, all kinds of terms that relate to the idea of Yisrael, but as I said, here you don't find at all the language of Am. That's a second distinction between Yisrael and Yisrael. I should point out, a Ramban that has to be found in Pashat B'Shalach, the Ramban has this theory, and the theory of the Ramban is based on the fact that the problem also in last week's Pasha that we just read the other day, on Shabbos, in Pashat B'Shalach, if you recall, the psukim that talk about Klal Yisrael before the Am, and they're in a beleaguered situation, very difficult. The Am is in front of them, Mitzrayim is behind them. Right away they scream out to Hashem, and they apparently are involved in prayer. And Hashem says, no, I'm not interested in your prayer, in your tefillah. Dabel ben Yisov, Yisov, plunge, go, jump into the sea. And right away all the Rishonim ask, isn't that an appropriate time for prayer, Eis Sarah? That's the best time for prayer. Rabban Shita, that even though he holds that tefillah is the Abonon, based on the Gemara Brachas. Oh, Gemara Brachas. Who's here learning Brachas? Gemara Andaf, Chavalov. Gemara says to Chavalov that something is Pala, something is Lois Pala. What's the din? If I'm not sure what I daven or not, what's Aloha? Do I have to repeat the davening again? The answer is third pair. Oh, you skipped that pair. Oh, okay.
Maybe I have to pay something.
You have to pay something. But say it no more. I'm sorry. The Gemara said that something is Pala, something Lois Pala. If you have a something with you daven or not, you don't have to daven again. Because feel the Abana. Something the Abana the Kula. However, you have a something they say Kriya Shema or not, you have to go back because Kriya Shema is Minat Torah. Good. So even the Rabban, who almost happens to hold that Tfilah is the Rabbanon, but Beis Sarah, Tfilah is Minat Torah. So that was an Eis Sarah. We are, the Yav is where? In front of us, each is behind us. By Yitzhakub and Eisel Lashem, should that be a time of Tfilah? So there are many answers to this question, but the Rabban writes that there were several groups. There was one group that believed in Hashem, and there was another group which was dependent on the majority that had absolutely no belief whatsoever in Hashem. And what term is the Torah used to describe Klal Yisrael in that juncture? Am. So the term Am does not have such a positive connotation. It's rather pejorative in nature. Ramban quotes from the Medrash to prove it. Okay, that's the second distinction. How Klal Yisrael described in Yisrael and how we describe in Pasuk Vayis Chanan. A third distinction that clearly in Vayis Chanan, again, we're not only talking about the generation that enters Eretz Yisrael, but you're looking at the Tukim, we're talking about literally future generations. We're talking about children and grandchildren, great-grandchildren. That's how the Torah presents it in Vayis Chanan, which is rather unusual. Again, not going to read the psukim, but you can take a look at the lower right hand column, in Vasadan, on the other side. Kisolid Banim, Uvnei Banim, lower right hand corner, we read that on Tisha B'Av, Menoshan Tevaretz, and Kisei that the Torah speaks about, there's an inordinate stress on grandchildren, somehow to ensure that we'll be permanently ensconced in Eretz Yisrael. That's another element that is very much stressed here, that's not found in Pasuk Yisrael. That's a third distinction. There are other distinctions, maybe I'll just mention one or two, and that is one or two more, really. As I said, Vayis Chanan is focused on Eretz Yisrael. And Yisrael was not at all focused on Eretz Yisrael. On the contrary, the pasuk says there, V'yisem li segula b'kol ha'amim ki li kol ha'aretz. Hashem is everywhere. Obviously, the Torah transcends boundaries. The Torah is not only, shall we say, in Yerushalayim HaKadosh, the Torah is relevant in every corner of the globe. And the obligation to learn Torah is also relevant everywhere. So in Yisrael, we have that universal aspect of Torah. Mashenk in Vayis Chanan is clearly more, shall we say, connected to Eretz Yisrael. Okay, so I've described to you a number of distinctions between the two. I'll mention one last distinction, and that is that in Pasuk Yisrael, how is the, as I said, in the Vayis Chanan and in general in Dvarim, the term used to describe Har Sinai is Chorev, many times mentioned. And in Yisrael, the term is Har Sinai as opposed to the term Chorev. I've shown you five distinctions. Most of these are textual distinctions, based on reading the text, and therefore I came to an obvious conclusion. I think it's pretty obvious. It was also, I think, borne out by many of these proofs that I mentioned to you, and that is that there are two different messages that are being described here. And now I'll try to spell out what I'm talking about, and I think you'll understand it without too much difficulty. Because many years ago, when my wife and I were zochet to have children, so young children don't really have such a great interest in learning. Sometimes even children are a bit older don't have such a great interest in learning. It's a phenomenon that we're quite familiar with. The idea is that a Rebbe should excite Talmidim and should hopefully inspire them sufficiently that they'll get involved in learning in a serious kind of way. So at one point, I used to go to Boston quite often, and I lived in Providence, Rhode Island, and I went to Boston every month, so I Shabbos to hear the Gol Ador, Marino Rabbeinu Hagoyin Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal. So I was lucky to be in the shir many, many years. And so after the shir, I said, I'm going to pose him the following question. There's a Gemara in Kedushin. I asked him the following question. Gemara says in Kedushin, who lilmo to b'no lilmo? Let's say you only have enough resources for either you to learn Torah or your children to learn Torah. So who should take precedence? The Gemara says, you take precedence over your children because you have more of an interest in learning Torah. Gemara Kedushin, that's what I'm calling it. Because Jesse is here. Anyway, so the Gemara says, who can lilmo? You take precedence over your children. Okay, there's another opinion that says if your child is very energetic, Rav Yehuda, I think it is, or is the Mamulach, if someone has a very strong interest in learning Torah, so then, under those circumstances, he comes before you. So I said to Rav Soloveitchik, I said to him, I don't understand. My children are not so excited. They were young children. They were in day school. They weren't too excited about learning Torah. And I was more excited about learning Torah. So should I learn Torah and, shall we say, so first he tells me, what exactly do you mean? They should work for a living and support you? That was his first comment. So I didn't expect him to respond that way, since I just quoted the Gemara. That's what I was interested in. The Gemara seems to say that I take precedence over my children. I said, no, I'm not saying they should support me. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying that I think I should be able to devote myself more to learning Torah, and they should, what should they do? I'm sorry?
Other stuff.
Thank you. They should do other stuff. So I saw Lazy said to Balak, follow me. I'll never forget it. This is many years ago. Maybe 35 years ago. He tells me, I can almost imitate him. I love to imitate him. He says to me, if the question was, who will me, or who will me, are you to learn Torah? Are your children to learn Torah? You're right. The Gemara is right. Who could have been known? But he said, that's not the question. So I looked at him. What is the question? I said, I will tell you what the question is. The question is, you to learn Torah, and will your children remain Jewish? Wow. That was like a dagger in the heart. In other words, if you don't provide them with any kind of Torah education, yeah, we might remain Jewish. But that's the question. Then, of course, who comes first? Obviously, they do. That's what I always say. Yeah?
Powerful.
Rather powerful, to say the least. And else, if the issue were purely an intellectual one, in terms of, shall we say, you pit the father against the father is motivated, he has a, shall we say, full of intellectual acuity, and he has the ability to learn Torah, and the son is not so motivated, not as keen on the whole idea of learning, then the father wins hands down. But that's not the issue. The Rav said the issue is not an intellectual, cognitive one. The issue is more profound, with far more reaching, greater reaching consequences. Namely, will there be, as Rav Soloveitchik would say, continuity of the Masoretic community? Will our community continue? Will we have any kind of Netzach? Correct? So that's the case that Rav Soloveitchik said, there's no question. Namely, the obligation to transmit the Masorah, correct, overrides the din of who limo or the no limo. Unquestionable. That's what the Rav told me. So in effect, what I understood from the Rav is that there are two aspects to Talmud Torah. If I may interpret what Rav Soloveitchik said to me in my own terminology. One is, there's a mitzvah to learn Torah as a means to an end. Unquestionably, if you want to know what to do, how to observe Shabbos, how to say brachot, how to perform the mitzvah tzitzis properly, and tefillin, you have to learn Torah. It's a means to an end. That is one that requires intellectual and cognitive development, and you have to hopefully develop analytical skills in order to learn how to piece the Gemara, how to analyze it, and you have to be able to conceptually articulate ideas from Talmud and what have you, no question about it. But that is purely, as I said, if you will, one aspect of Talmud Torah, which I think Lefi Adius Daiti is obviously a very significant aspect, and that's a din, of course, Chanocha Na'al Pidarko. You have to educate each child, shall we say, in accordance with his or her abilities, with his or her predispositions, sensitivities, and the like. However, there's apparently a far more significant obligation regarding Talmud Torah, and that's to ensure that the Masorah will continue, that Netzach Yisrael lo yishaker, that will assure Jewish continuity, the covenantal community will transmit the heritage, and that, Lefi Anius Daiti, is not something which is based on intellectual kind of approach, but rather, what does that require? An emotional commitment to the Torah. Not a commitment based on seichel, but one based on regesh. How do you translate regesh?
Feelings.
Based on regesh. A person has to become so excited and so inspired by what the Torah has to offer that it will envelop their entire personality. So I've always thought that these are the two pashas of Yisrael and Rosh Hashanah. The pasha of Yisrael is the one that, shall we say, articulates the intellectual element of Torah. The fact that, as I mentioned earlier, that undoubtedly in order to learn, one has to develop, number one, skills. And that's what we do. That's why you come to yeshiva, in order to be able to, hopefully, mitzvah Hashem, sharpen your skills, hone them, learn how to analyze a piece of Gemara, and intellectually become excited about the learning. That's something that's very significant, very critical in a person's life. Well, the young man or the young woman, there's no distinction between the two. But then there's a second element that in some respects is far, far more preeminent, and far more serious, and far more significant. And that is, the person has to literally become so saturated with the Torah that it becomes experientially, it becomes a passionate focus of his life. It becomes something which is really, he's connected to, not just intellectually, but emotionally. And that is what I call the Eish of Torah. That's the passion of Rosh Hashanah. The fire of Torah. That Torah should light a fire in all of us and should put us on a almost a totally different plane. And that's a very significant aspect of Talmud Torah. Obviously, we need both. We need, on the one hand, the intellectual and the the academic side of Torah, but even more significant, we need actually this emotional commitment, this spiritual commitment to Talmud Torah, which of course is not easily acquired. I'll just mention a story that our Soloveitchik told over. There was one summer that the Rav said, Shiurim, the Rav was very close to Chabad. He had a strong liking for Chabad, and he wanted to say Shiurim Alekutei Torah, which happens to be the Torah of the Baal Tanya. The Baal Tanya is the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, Zedisadi Libracha. And the Rav, it was before Rosh Hashanah, the Rav said, if you want to understand the grandeur of Rosh Hashanah, you have to study Lekutei Torah. People in the Shia were not too happy about that. They wanted to hear from Rav Soloveitchik on the Rambam, on different Gemaras. And so the Rav told the following story. I think it's an apocryphal story, if I'm not mistaken. It's written by the well-known author, Yudam Peretz. That was a maskil, but a very fascinating personality. Anyway, the story describes, apparently, the encounter of Rav Soloveitchik's great-grandfather, whose name was the Beis Halevi. The Rav was named after his great-grandfather, Rav Yossi Dov Halevi Soloveitchik, an encounter between him and the Biala Rebbe. The Biala Rebbe, of course, the Hasidic sage, he had become a Rebbe, he became a Chassid, and even though he was a Talmud of the Beis Halevi, he became a Chassid. Such things happen, I would say, probably the rather unusual kind of event, from a diehard Litvak to emerge a Chassid, but it can happen from time to time. So this Biala Rebbe became a Chassid. So the Biala Rebbe was full of passion and religious fervor, the way Chassidim are full of passion and the like. So he had asked his master, his Rebbe, the Beis Halevi, to come and visit him at a gathering of the Rebbe's followers. So the way Yolam of Paris tells the story, so what happened was that it was the winter time, and it was cold, and there was enormous amount of snow that was outside as well. A cold, snowy, wintry, blustery kind of day. And of course the chassidim started to sing, and guess what? Before you knew it, the snow had melted, and somehow there was warmth that entered the atmosphere, and everything was just almost very chagiga-like. And they were singing, and they were dancing, and guess what? Even in the middle of the winter, the trees began to bloom, and the birds began to chirp, and on and on and on. It means the cold Russian with the twilight was somehow transformed to the ecstasy of the chassidim to a nice, bright spring day. So now the day continues, and Shkia is coming, sunset. So the Beis Halevi looked at his watch and interrupted the Biala Rebbe and all the chassidim who were dancing and singing to remind them it's getting late. It's time for Daven Mincha. It's almost Shkia. It's almost sunset. And suddenly, what happened? The glorious spring faded. The cold, dreary, blustery winter once again came to the fore. And our Soloveitchik looked at the Talmidim and said, "That's you. I want to teach Likutei Torah. I want to share with you not only that which is in my mind, but that which is in my heart. You're not interested. You're only interested in that which is in my mind, and that which is not in my not that which is in my heart." Wow. Another, shall we say, bombshell from our Soloveitchik. I suspect that these two parshas are exactly that. Parshas Yisroel is essentially the mind. And Parshas Vayeschanan, which is the ish of Torah, is the heart. So which of the two is more critical? Clearly both are needed, both are necessary. But if I were to be asked which one is more significant, the answer is pretty obvious. And that is, and even talking to a brisker and a diehard litvak. You know what I mean by litvak? How do you translate litvak? No, that's incorrect. I don't know what that word means. I have to translate that for me too. What does that mean? I'm sorry? I said litvak. I didn't say what you said, the two words you used. No, that I used the other word that you used prior to that. What does litvak mean? What? Correct. This means everything is based on pure, cold intellect and rationality. Everything has to have a rational underpinning. Can't do anything without rationality. And there's now, I see I have two bases for discussion with you on both of those issues. Separate story. This is Shem, so remind me back in discussion. There's no question that ultimately what is more significant is clearly the Eish HaTorah, the fire of Torah. A person who's zocheh to the fire of Torah, there is no question that you can go way beyond someone who purely is an intellectual. Often people who are intellectual in nature, maybe, shall we say, intellectually connected to the Torah, but their heart is not there. Rambam calls them disembodied intellects. Or Scholem HaNivdolim, Guf B'li Neshama. It's a body without a neshama, without any soul. The idea of Liman HaTorah and our connection to Liman HaTorah has to be based on both of these, shall we say, elements. Namely, obviously we have to also acquire the skills needed to learn Torah, and we have to be committed to it, and we have to understand it, but at the same time, we have to realize that if we don't have that ish, we have not kindled a spark, and we have not become, shall we say, uplifted, elevated, spiritually, emotionally, then unfortunately, even the first element will not necessarily endure. You know what I'm saying? These are the two parshas of Yisroel and Vayeschanan. And I think it's very inherent and embedded in some of the distinctions that I mentioned to you. And I will even mention another idea, which Rav Soloveitchik mentioned on another occasion. There are two aspects to Talmud Torah. One is to learn in order to know, in order to fulfill the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, or to learn in order to know what to do. But there's a second element of Talmud Torah to achieve Kiddusha, to achieve sanctification. Torah sanctifies the person. Torah actually elevates the person, sanctifies the person, brings him beyond, if you will, where the world is at. And this second element, as I said, seems to be the Pasha of Vayeschanan, much more so than the Pasha of Yisrael. So now, just to mention the distinction that I mentioned earlier, it seems that Kol of Yisrael represents that intellectual element. Eish of Vayeschanan is the emotional element. Number two, Eretz Yisrael, if you will, and the term that's used here in Vayeschanan, which is the term of Chorev, as opposed to Harsinai. Harsinai, again, I can prove this, but I don't have time now to go into all of this. I'm just utilizing the distinctions I meant earlier, that it seems that it's very clear that there are two different experiences that both of these are critical. The person wants to grow in learning, and the person wants to become more committed to Hashem Yisbarach, and more dovig in Hashem Yisbarach. One has to actually try to the extent that one can, to really be connected at both levels, at the intellectual level and the emotional level. I mentioned also that in Vaschana you have a charge to future generations, children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Rav Soloveitchik once said in the Shir, he pointed out that we asked the Seer, the Rambam, and I'm not going to go to the Seer right now, but he said the distinction between parents and grandparents is that grandparents have one virtue over the parents, namely, they are closer to Arsima. They're closer to the, shall we say, the Masora. Parents have a greater obligation to teach Torah to the children, no question about it. A halachic obligation. Grandparents also have an obligation, but not the same. Because grandparents are, the connection they have, I will, if I may say, is more the connection of Eschanan, the Eshat Torah connection, as opposed to the Yisro connection. So these are two totally different aspects of Torah that we have to somehow tap into. The intellectual aspect, as well as the emotional aspect. Now, it seems to me that, how does one go about doing it? Maybe I'll ask you, and perhaps you'll be able to tell me how you tap into either of these two. What would you say? Yeah, let's start with the intellectual one. How does one tap into that? At least make a bracha, in the meanwhile, I'll give you a second to answer. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Hayom Shakol Nei Adonai. Yes, clearly the intellectual aspect should only be acquired by learning. There's no, you don't have to be, you can't do it through medicine, through all kinds of sleight of hand, or necromancy, or sorcery, I don't know what, whatever other tricks you have up your sleeve. Maybe you're a ventriloquist, or maybe you have other kinds of, shall we say, kochot that perhaps I'm not zochet to. You have to learn. The Gemara says in Nida, Harotze Sheyachkin Yarda B'Yeshiva. If you want to become a Talmud Chacham, you have to sit. I mean, you can learn Torah standing also. That's the Gemara Megillah. Where are you, Adam? Adam, is very familiar with my second Megillah. I'm not joking. He learned it many times. And I turn to two people at this yeshiva when I meet some of my second Megillah. Now he's the only one left. The other guy left. What was that?
Mickey.
Mickey. He left. So now I rely on Adam. So the Gemara says at one point they said, learn Torah by Megillah. But the Gemara said, Mishabeh, something I'm Megillah. You're the full Shalom. People became weak. You have to learn the yeshiva, but you want to learn, and you want to acquire knowledge, and you want to become intellectually in sync and tandem with the Torah, you have to learn. You have to be yeshiva. Okay, that's the first. What about the second? How do I acquire the second quality, which I say is more significant than the first quality? How do I do that? What would you suggest? Yonah, you're a man of experience. Shana Ben.
Not as much as Jesse.
What?
I said not as much as Jesse. Oh,
well, that's Jesse. How do you acquire the second? How is that acquired? What technique, what modus operandi would you suggest in order to acquire the second? What was that? I think, by the way, I see this is one way, no question about it, because they stress very much that element, that aspect. But as you probably know, I'm not exactly a chassid. That's an understatement of the year. So clearly there has to be other ways. Unless you assume that I did not acquire the second. I think I did. So how did I acquire it?
Masir.
What?
Masir.
Masir is a way to do it, yes. What else?
Learn from your parents.
What was that?
Learn from your parents.
Unquestionably. But that, how would that necessarily give you the Eshat Torah? If your parents have that, that's great. Then obviously you'll acquire it. What?
It's like a change from Masir.
Yeah, I agree with that too, I'm asking. So I would venture to say that, you know where I got it from? My Rabbi. No question about it. Thank you. Okay, you're one for three. Anyway.
It's a good batting average.
That's a good batting average?
Yeah.
One for three? Man. I don't know which baseball league you belong to. Probably semi baseball. But anyway, whatever the case is, I got it from my Rabbeim. I was zochet to hear Rabbeim, to hear Shiur for many, many years. Very inspiring shiurim, and very exciting shiurim. Rav Soloveitchik, I actually went to his shiurim for 13 years. I think I did tell you, I'll try to end with this. Okay, I won't be over in Baltosif, Chas v'Shalom. I didn't miss a shiur in 13 years, can you believe that? How could I miss a shiur? One shiur I did miss. My wife, Shlita, decided to, in Providence, Rhode Island, that I went to a shiur in the summertime. Providence and Boston are about on the Mass Turnpike, an hour or so. I used to go every Motzei Shabbos. I actually even ended up getting a few tickets. I don't know exactly why. They said they claimed I was speeding. But I told one of the patrol people, one of the officers, one of the state troopers, that I was going to hear the greatest rabbi on this planet. So I told him one of the times that he stopped me. I was going a bit over, about 15, 20 miles over. I don't have time for the Shia. What can I do? Anyway, so the guy said to me, he said, "You're joking." I said, "No, I'm not." So I said, he said, "I want you to, I don't believe you." I said, "Well, here's the number of Maimonides. Maimonides goes to the Rav Sefer Shiva." I gave him the number, and to my astounding astonishment, someone actually answered the phone of Maimonides, and they said, this policeman said to the person who answered the phone, he said to him, I stopped someone here on the Mass Turnpike, and he told me that the greatest rabbi in the world is about to give some sort of a lecture, you know, Shira is exactly, he's a non-Jewish state trooper, and is that true? The guy at the other end of the phone says, "No, he made a mistake. He's not the greatest rabbi of the world. The greatest rabbi that ever traveled," he said, "that ever traveled the earth is about to give the lecture." That's what this guy said. He must have been a cynical jokester. I later found out who he was. I don't want to say who he is. Cynical jokester, etc. So this policeman was just taken aback and said, "Okay, I want to do the following. I'm going to follow you now. I want to see if there's such a thing." He followed me all the way to Maimonides. Follow me to my mind. I said, "Can I go a bit faster?" This is a true story. And he followed me. He actually went in to my Maimonides, and he saw there was literally hundreds and hundreds of people gathered, and he actually even met Rabbi Soloveitchik, the state trooper, and the whole garments, etc., etc., and all the regalia. It's the only time I didn't get a ticket. But I tell you the story because I missed a shiur except once in Providence, Rhode Island. So my wife decided to plant tomatoes. This is in the late 70s. And to plant tomatoes on a high ledge in the backyard. And she fell, unfortunately, and she broke her leg. And so we had to go to the hospital, orthopedic surgeon, the whole leg was set, all kinds of things, etc., etc. And then after her leg was set, she's in traction and her leg is up. And we had very young children at the time. And then I said to my wife, the shiur was in the afternoon, "I have to go to the shiur." My wife said to me, "Are you... just fill in the blanks." Et cetera, et cetera. So I said, "But the shiur is the shiur Rabbi Soloveitchik, you know, the greatest rabbi that ever traveled on this earth." My wife said, "You know, I'm here, we have little kids." They were amish little kids. I said, "Oh, they'll take care of you, no problem at all." Et cetera, et cetera. Actually, so I was the only shiur I ever missed Rabbi Soloveitchik. And I even called my Rebbe in New York, Nissim Albers, that's how, to ask him what to do. So he said to me, I explained to him the situation, he said to me, "I will tell you what you do. Tomorrow we will get six psychiatrists to examine." He told me, "Tomorrow." He says, "I don't know what," he said, "I'm not sure we can wait till tomorrow." I just called him stop. Anyway, but the, why am I telling you the story? Next day, I gathered 13 notebooks. 13 notebooks of Talmidim, so I shouldn't miss one joke of Rav Soloveitchik. That's based on Gemara Tzukah. Gemara says, "Yoleh lo ibo, afil sicha schulin shil tamir chacham tzvichol ima." So he has an impact on my life. Not just he, all the other rabbis. And they filled me with the fire of the Torah, the Baruch Hashem, Aliyam Azeh, I'm still zochah to that fire. And that's what I want you to be full of as well. Fire! I want you to get that fire as well, and that's what the Rabbeinu wants you to do. And that's what Yeshiva is all about. It has two functions. One, intellectually, give you the tools, hopefully, to move ahead, but also to be enveloped by this fire, which many of you have, Baruch Hashem. You also have red hair. You can remember the red-headed lead. I'm a big chassid of, you know, of...
Sherlock Holmes.
Correct, Sherlock Holmes. Boy, you're 2 for 4 now. Your batting average is improving. Eish HaTorah, that's the key. If you have the Eish HaTorah, you will not miss a shiur. You'll come to every shiur, you'll come to every seder, you'll come to Minyan on time, even before. Because you're in love with the Torah, in love with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Alavai that bracha should be chal on all of us.